I will. I've been asked to give a lecture on the non-minimal pure spinor formalism and amplitude computation in that formalism. So I understand that you already had some introduction to the pure spinor formalism, which essentially gives you explain you where the formalism can come from, and essentially it has to do with the minimal one. So I will have, in the first place, I will introduce, I mean, the non-minimal pure spinor formalism. And the formalism essentially, I mean, all what I would be saying in this lecture will be based on these three papers. So NB means Nathan Berkowitz, and NN is Nikita Nekrasov. So this is, I think this is the paper where Nathan defines the non-minimal pure spinor formalism. At least he has other papers, but at least this one is one of the papers that is cited on the web, and this is where there are some computation of some on the loop amplitude that I'm going to describe at the end, and this is a paper where specific regularization in this formalism is done. So this formalism, as you know, I mean, it's a covariant version of string perturbation where supersymmetry is explicit. And I just want you to remind that point, because at some point when I will discuss some particular properties of the amplitude and particular specific computation of F terms that are special quantities in superspace, it will be very important. And this, the fact that supersymmetry is explicit and the way supersymmetry will untangle the computation is very, very characteristic of the formalism, although it's still a bit obscure from some there are some aspects of it that are still not completely clear. Anyway. So anyway, so let me define the formalism. So you're already familiar with the pure spinor ghost. So this is the bosonic ghost that has conformal weight zero. I will be working in 10 dimensions because I will be focusing essentially on the closed strings, type 2A or type 2B. Okay. So for the left movers, you define the pure spinor. Okay, I'm writing it this way. Ghost. That is a scalar on the worksheet and satisfy this constraint where gamma m alpha beta are SO tensi gamma matrices, and m runs from 1 to 10. Okay. So and you have already seen that actually this constraint leaves you with 11 complex components. For lambda. And L means left movers on the worksheet. So, and R means right moving. And the chirality here, so the relative chirality between the left and the right movers depends on whether I'm doing type 2A or type 2B. Okay. So what is new with the non-minimal formalism is that what happens is that one introduces a new set of ghosts. So I'm writing it for the left mover, and you just for the right movers you just copy what the same with a subscript R. So pay attention to the place where the indices are, the spinor indices are. Okay, so alpha, I didn't say it. Alpha is in the, for example, in that convention, is the spinor indices for SO10, so is in the 16. So this one, the alpha downstairs will be in the 16 bar, the spinor conjugate. Then I will have gamma m, and if I want alpha beta, lambda bar. Okay, that looks, it is the same constraint, but it's a different chirality quantity. And what is new is that there is another constraint, lambda bar gamma m alpha beta, r beta equals zero. So again, so lambda bar is a scalar, so it has conformal wave zero, and it's bosonic, the bosonic ghost in the worksheet. R beta is a fermionic ghost. That's conformal wave zero. And so together with this, with the variables comes the conjugate variable. So okay, let me write it here. So the conjugate variable to lambda alpha, the conjugate ghost is omega alpha, and satisfy this OP, and omega alpha has conformal weight 1 in the worksheet. And to lambda bar alpha, define the conjugated ghost that I call W bar alpha. And to R, there is a alpha of Z. Then the conjugated ghost is S alpha, and then it's, okay, one over Z. And so all these guys have conformal weight 1. This is bosonic, fermionic. So the pure spinor action on the worksheet, so in the conformal gauge, the non-minimal pure spinor action would be, okay, over one, to Z. And then, okay, there is the usual term for the matter part. It's always there. So this is the bosonic part. There is the fermionic part. So this is for the right movers. And for the left movers, for the left movers and the right movers, that would be this one. So it is R and L. Okay. And then there is the ghost system. So this is the pure spinor that I think you have already seen in previous lectures by Nathan. And then the new system comes here this way. Plus or minus. Okay. S alpha D bar R alpha. Okay. And then there is the same for the right mover. With the correct chirality, depending if you are doing type 2A or type 2B. Okay? Okay, so the important point is that so in the minimal pure spinor formalisms that you have seen, so the minimal mean, so there was a Beresteyn charge that was defined like that, where the alpha is P alpha minus the variation, okay, the 1 half gamma m alpha beta dxn minus 1 8 gamma m alpha beta gamma m gamma delta theta beta gamma d. Okay. So, and this was the Beresteyn charge for the minimal sector, the minimal pure spinor formalism that is given by everything that is there. So now that I have introduced this new system, actually the Beresteyn charge is extended. And the point is that one wants actually that as well, that the cohomology. So you have seen that the physical vertex operator are in the cohomology of the Q minimal. And so there is a grading in the cohomology given by the Gauss charge respect to this, to the pure spinor lambda. So vertex operator, physical vertex operator, auxiliary and auxiliary field, they will carry your lambda charge. Here, actually, what will happen is that the density charge is going to be extended so that actually these new variables, lambda bar, W bar, R, and S, form a topological quartet. And so the cohomology, the physical state, are not going to depend on that. So, I mean, it's not very difficult, so, to write what is the density charge. So, later on, I will only be working with this formalism. So I will drop just for that line. So this is the old one, to which, I mean, I add a term that is W bar alpha R alpha. So the claim is that actually Q non-minimal of lambda bar alpha is R alpha. Q non-minimal R alpha is 0. Q non-minimal W bar alpha is 0. And Q non-minimal S alpha is W bar alpha. Okay? So that makes a quartet. So by the usual quartet argument, the physical state in the cohomology of that operator will not depend on these variables. Okay. Okay. So the point is that. Excuse me. Right. Because I mean, you know, if you take, you can define when you define the state. Okay, I'm not sure I will be able to give it without mistake. So you want, so the states you are looking at are given by this. So Q psi equals 0, and then as well psi is modulo gauge. Okay, Q is your Q. Okay. So I think the argument is that if you have a quartet like that, you can always all the dependence on this field, you can redefine them away. Okay. Yes. And that. But the point is that it's going to be very important later on for the amplitude computation that the physical state, actually the vertex operator that we will consider, will not depend on these variables for some reason that you will see. Okay. Okay. So, yes. No, I don't have to. Yes. Yes, that's right. Okay, So since you have a constraint on lambda, the conjugated ghost W there's a gauge symmetry on it from the constraint. So this is the gauge symmetry, I think Nathan has explained it to you already. So the new thing with the non-minimal variables, that of course there is the equivalent gauge symmetry for parameter lambda bar from the lambda bar constraint here. But because of the lambda bar r equals 0 constraint, there's gauge symmetry from that one, okay? So what you want is that when you construct physical quantities, you want that things are invariant under this gauge symmetry. So you build, you have the operator that are in terms of the lambda and W, this operator is invariant under that symmetry using the 10-dimensional first identity. You can show that. But for the non-minimal variables, what you have is that you have the Lorentz invariant quantities that are gamma mn lambda bar minus s gamma mn r. And you have the current J. What do I want to define? Oh, okay. W bar alpha lambda bar minus alpha. So this is the bar. And then there are quantities SMN, S gamma MN lambda, and the scalar, which is S alpha lambda alpha. So these quantities are invariant under these gauge symmetries that are induced by the constraint. And later on, the amplitude computation, I mean, later on when you do the complete amplitude, you want to integrate over the pure spinor space. The pure spinor space, as you can understand from that constraint, is a cone. Okay. So in particular, you can take lambda very large. And so you will need to introduce a regulator to cut off the large lambda bar values, and the regulator will involve actually the zero mode of this object when I will be on higher loop amplitude. So, but nevertheless, there is already something very interesting in the current. So you want to look at what is the So let me copy. So you have many currents. So you have the lambda current, which is now Z, W alpha, lambda alpha of Z. Then I have what I call lambda bar of Z, which is W bar lambda bar. And then there is something that I call GR, which is alpha. And alpha, of course, everything is normal order, okay? So now you want to look at what is the OP between these currents. Okay, so there's one for Z. And the OP with these currents with the energy momentum tensor, T. And this one has minus 8 over Z cube plus G lambda over Z square. So there is an anomaly here. Okay. So it's like what you do in the RNS. You have the BC system and you look at the ghost anomaly in the BC system. And that is going to be. So if I look at J lambda bar of Z with T, then I find that actually this one has no anomaly. And GR of Z with the energy momentum tensor is 11 over Z plus GR over Z square. Yes. monk? No? Okay. I think. And so if I if you define the current that is G alpha, G alpha minus G bar alpha, lambda bar alpha, this one has an anomaly I think maybe that is plus 3. I think. Is it? I'm just confused. I think I changed the two, right? Yeah, yes. Okay. Yeah, yes. I mean, yes. I think it's the I'm sorry. Yes. The one that has no anomaly is this one. Is the one I wrote there. Alpha. Yes, I'm sorry. So this one has no anomaly, yes. And this one has an anomaly that is 11. So I should have called J tilde lambda bar, which is bar alpha lambda bar alpha. This one has an anomaly that is 11. So that means this current that is W alpha lambda alpha minus lambda bar alpha, W bar alpha lambda bar alpha, an anomaly that is plus 3. The plus 3 you remember from, you know, bosonic string perturbation, the same as the DC system. Since at the end, when you will compute amplitude, you will integrate over all these pure spinor variables. I think if you are people who are used to string perturbation can already have a guess, you can maybe foresee what kind of prescription we will give. Okay. So actually, this counting about these anomalies, this anomaly will come later, because when I will write the integral over the W and the lambda, I will again redo the computation in a different way. So it will come back later. Okay. So the other extremely important ingredient in that theory is the B ghost. Since I will only be working with the non-minimal formalism, the VST charge is always this one. So I drop the non-minimal protocol. So in that case, in that theory, you can find a B ghost that is such that Q be equal T. In the minimal formalism, so that in the formalism that are just as lambda, it doesn't have lambda bar and all these extra variables, it's not possible to get the construct of B ghost that is such that Q on B is T. What you construct in the minimal formalism is the picture-raised version of the B ghost. So there is a picture changing operator that is there. In that case, you can do it. And I'm just going to write what is the B ghost. Yeah. I realize that. Okay, yeah. So, correctly, the non-minimal B ghost, yeah, is given by SL lambda bar alpha plus something that is lambda bar alpha over lambda bar. So when I write lambda bar, it means, well, just what you can imagine, this contraction, times something, which is G alpha plus R beta over lambda bar, and some operator that is H alpha beta, plus, okay, I think minus maybe, R alpha R beta over lambda alpha, lambda bar, K alpha beta gamma, R alpha R beta R gamma, lambda alpha beta cube, L alpha beta gamma delta. I'm sorry. Beta gamma delta. Okay. So there is a lambda bar over something that has lambda bar here, and then everything goes by increasing power of what I call R, so the fermionic ghost, part of the quartet, and each R comes with a pole, lambda, lambda bar. So, have you defined all these quantities? Have you defined all these quantities, J, H? I see, okay. So, it's a pretty long computation. In that formalism, it's quicker to do than in the minimal formalism, but it's a pretty involved computation to check, actually, to construct this big ghost. There is a very nice geometrical way using Czech cohomology that Nikita explained how to get this thing, but nevertheless. So the point is that J alpha is given by this. So I'm giving you the answer because what I want is to explain the amplitude prescription. Yes. You want a conceptual answer or a technical answer? The technical answer is that it stopped because, as you know, when you the chain actually when you compute QB on T and you use at each step you use the identity that so Q lambda alpha T, this is the first identity you use, and then you systematically use that these identities to turn the crank alpha g beta, okay, and then you find that by explicit computation that it stops at this level. So in a sense, after L, there is no more operator you can construct. In terms of the cohomology, it has to do with you see, it depends the way. So in the minimal formalism, essentially, this one will be a lambda to the. In the minimal formalism, you have the same expression as you know, where if you don't have the poles, and instead of the R, you have the lambdas. So this is a lambda to the fourth, and then you don't find any more states in the minimal Kirstenov cohomology, so that you can go further. In the non-minimal formalism, the reason is given by the Czech cohomology argument. You know, so in a sense, what number of patch? The point is that. All this operator. So what you do is that you decompose the big ghost in terms of various Czech chain, and that depends on the number of patches that you need to cover the pure spinor space, and you need a finite number of them, and then you find that the chain stops. But okay, I don't think I have a better answer than this, and I don't think people will understand why it really stops except by brute force computation. It's, as you know, it's related as well to the fact that the zero momentum cohomology in the minimal form stops at ghost number 3. Okay? And it's not already a trivial. So anyway, so let me give you what is this this operator, gamma mn, theta alpha, j lambda, d theta alpha, plus 1/4 d square theta alpha. Okay, so here this is the j lambda that is there. So actually this operator comes from the kappa symmetry. So, you know, there is this origin of the pure spinor formalism that comes from the kappa symmetry that I think Nathan has explained to you. So this operator was already introduced by Warren in some old paper, and has some natural origin if you think about the geometrical way that kappa symmetry gives you. But okay, anyway, you find it. This is the generator that you recognize, P slash D, meaning the constraint, the Ventures constraint. Okay. Yeah, the reason why it stops there is really because the Zermelo-Tom cohomology stops when at some Gauss number, lambda Gauss number 3. But it's a, yes, right. I don't know. I mean, the identity that you have to use technically look the same. But I mean, I don't have an a priori and conceptual reason to tell that it has to stop. This is a short answer. Yes. But the other terms are, you see, this one and MNN is this Lorentz, is the equivalent of the Lorentz generator that is bulb from the pure spinner. So all this, well, not that one. But all these terms, they involve the pure spinner, so you can't get them if you don't have the pure spinner. But this is the capacimetry generator, this one. So one should recognize it, modulo sum. So H alpha beta is so gamma M N P alpha beta D gamma M N P D. I'm writing all these guys because it's going to be very important later on, because you know when you do amplitude computation you want to saturate zero modes, and all these quantities have zero modes. And this is what gives you the structure of the amplitude. So Mn pi, okay, there is some number, yeah. K alpha beta gamma equal, so it's a gamma Mn p alpha beta. Gamma M D. Well, actually, yes. N M P. And the last one, L alpha beta gamma delta. Is gamma M N P alpha beta P Q R. Gamma delta, and it's Mn and QR divided by some number. So anyway, everything is very explicit and it's given by this expression, okay? So later on, the only thing I will need, you see, So this is really what you want to call the big Gauss when you construct amplitude and do string perturbation. So in a sense, this one has Gauss number minus one, because this has Gauss number zero, this has Gauss number plus one. And speaking about lambda Gauss, lambda. And it has, so it's BZZ, so it has conformal weight two. And so this is the object that really is conjugated to the moduli on the multi-loop amplitude. And it's the object that you can use to convert integrated to unintegrated vertex operators. Okay. So it's really the same quantity as the one that you are used in string perturbation. The important point is that this one is a fermion, so it will have zero mode. This is a fermionic quantity because it contains the canonical conjugated momenta to the superspace variable, so it contains zero mode. So you see, the zero mode structure when you do an amplitude computation will depend on the B field insertion. Okay. And there is the lambda. The pure spinner comes here with poles, and then I will tell you what we have to do with this. So, I'm sorry. So this big ghost actually is better than the one, I don't know if Nathan has given, shown you the big ghost in the minimal formalism, but in the minimal formalism, so since he hasn't shown it to you, I want to show you the expression that you will get. I will not show you the expression, but I will tell you the main difference is the following. So in the minimal formalism, as I said, there is no operator with Gauss number minus one that satisfies that identity. So what you need is that here you need somebody that is the picture raising operator. The problem is that the way you define the picture raising operator involves some space-time tensor, and so it depends on some object that, you know, this is a tensor that lives in space-time. So a priori, it seems that it doesn't look very Lorentz covariant because it depends on some auxiliary constant. The amplitude don't depend on that because the variation of this big Gauss on this quantity is Q exact. So here, in that expression, everything is defined, it's completely Lorentz invariant. And as well, okay, supersymmetry will be explicit as you will see. So this is why the non-minimal formalism is an improvement over the minimal one, and the reason why I'm not talking about the minimal one today. Okay. Okay, so let me. So. Right. So what I know that we have, basically we have all the ingredients that we need to, so this is the matter field, this is the Gauss system though. So now I want to define amplitude, because this is, I want to compute amplitude. So as you usually do, then the amplitude will take the form of, so let's start with the tree amplitude. So this will have the form of some integration over the pure spinor lambda, the pure spinor lambda bar, anyway, okay. And then, okay, for some quantity, lambda bar, contain R, that will contain, okay, there is the, so the modulus square means left and right movers. Yeah, I'm lifting, I'm moving blank. There is the d10x because I am in 10 dimension by extensivity, and there is the d16 theta for the left, and d16 theta for the right because I'm doing the plus term. Okay. So this is essentially schematically what you want as a definition of a tree amplitude. So f is what? So f will contain your vertex operators. So the vertex operator q. In the pure spinor cohomology, so I mean there are Q and there's this gauge symmetry Q lambda. So have you defined vertex operators? Okay. So essentially, the vertex operator, so there will be the integrated vertex operator to Z of that form. And so I think you have seen that for. So then the vertex operator, let me write the form that they take. So there is the integrated vertex operator, and there is the unintegrated vertex operator called V1, lambda alpha, left, lambda alpha, right, A alpha, right alpha, of x, etc. And here u is going to be modulus square of I'm using a notation when every closed string is the holomorphic square of open string. So the integrated vertex operator is the square of the left movers and the right movers. So this is what normally, this is the dx. So this is the supersymmetric version of the Young-Mills operator, and the square is for the closed string sector. So that contains the massless supergravity sector, so the graviton, the dilaton, the B field, and the Ramon charge. Anyway, so W alpha is the superfield that I think Nathan introduced to you, which contains so in the closed string sector, the Ramon-Ramon field are alpha beta, d alpha beta, left and right, and so from that part, the leading part, the zero for the theta. Higher order in theta is the Ramon-Ramon field strength. So you see, so the point is that first, so I have to tell you, so what I want here is that F is insertion of certain number of vertex operators. So the point is that you have to understand, so here this has Gauss, this has Gauss number 1, 1, in the sense it has Gauss number 1 respect to the left moving pure spinner, this Gauss number 1 to the right moving pure spinner. Okay? And this one has no Gauss number. Okay? So in fact, okay, already when I mentioned these three, you expect that like in string theory at tree level, you want to have three integrated vertex operator by the conformal conformal symmetry after having three. Because you have to fix the conformal symmetry on the sphere, and then the rest will be integrated vertex operator. Here you will see that you will need these three integrated vertex operator by looking at the Gauss charge of the measure. So I have to tell you what is the measure of integration. So the measure of integration. You didn't define the measure. Okay. So anyway. So I'm writing an expression, and then I will explain in words where it comes from, actually. So the pure spinner lambda that satisfies lambda gamma and lambda equals zero, essentially they live on that space, okay? It's written over U5. And I don't know if it has been explained to you, but you can solve that constraint, the pure spinner constraint, using an explicit U5 formalism. So for lambda, I told you that lambda alpha is in the 16 of SO10. So the 16 of SO10 is the scalar, 16 is the 1, the 10, and the 5 bar of SO10. So that means the spinner, you can decompose it as a scalar. So let me call it lambda 0, then a 2 form, and then a vector under SU5. Okay? So this is. So what happens is that when you solve the pure spinner constraint, you find actually that the solution is given by lambda, maybe use gamma, 1. So there is UAB. And then the vector is completely expressed in terms of the two form by A, B, C, D. A, B, C, D, E, U, A, B, U, C, D. So that means you only have 1 plus 10. So this is 1. So there is only 1 plus 10 equal 11 independent components. So, and then this quantity is you can think about some kind of twister on this quotient, which is a certain over U5. And there's a natural measure of integration that you can associate that, that takes a form of, so this is a scalar, so what I want here is that I want to define something that is a scalar quantity that is defined in terms of the, of my pure spinor. So this is a completely scalar object. Yes, completely scalar object. And all the indices are saturated, and this is only a tensor that is composed by gamma matrices. Okay. So the you see that this object in terms of the charge, there is 11 lambda, and there are 3 lambdas here. So that means this one has gross charge plus 8. And this is the same as the 8 that you see there. So this one has 11 lambda bar, 3 lambda bar here. So it is plus 8 lambda bar, but this is lambda bar has opposite charge to lambda, minus 8. And here what you have is that you have, right, you have lambda bar here. So this is minus 3. Anyway. Yes, so normally, that's okay. So in terms of these quantities, so I repeat, the tensor here are just tensor composed of gamma matrices. And it will take, I mean, you can find the expression in the papers by Nathan. And for the expression for the tensor are perfectly known, but the point is that you need them if you want to explicitly evaluate the tensorial structure of your amplitude. But for what, for the structure I want to tell you, what I said is only needed. So now if I count the charge here, what I have is that plus, so I have something that is, that has minus 3 as a gross number. Because this is, you multiply these factors. So then you understand that, so this is for the left and the right. So I have to compensate because it's an amplitude, so it has to have no gross number in total. So I need to have 3 integrated vertex operators. So here I need, and then here the gross charge is completely saturated, so I can have R4, 2. But this is why, I mean, the free is really the same free. And actually, it's, okay. So this is one piece of the tree prescription. The other piece, which actually you need, is that, as I said, I mean, this is, oh, oops. This is a cone. So you integrate up to lambda, lambda bar, infinite. And you want that this, the integral are converging. So you have to regulate this thing. So the natural way to regulate in so what happens is that you have to insert a regulator in the integral, in the prescription for the amplitude, which Nathan showed that you can define a regulator that is given by exponential of a Q of some gauge fermion when the gauge fermion is minus lambda bar alpha theta alpha. And if you compute it, then you find that it's exponential minus lambda alpha, r alpha, theta alpha. But then you see that it's a Gaussian-like regularization. So it's going to cure the divergence at lambda and lambda bar going to infinity. And it is Q exact, so it's a very, I mean, it's harmless in the amplitude, physical amplitude, okay? And, okay, so that's for the tree amplitude. So now let me move to loop amplitude. Okay. And you have any question? Okay. Let's move to loop amplitude computation. Okay. Okay. So what I'm going to tell later is that in fact you can rescale this regulator by any whole lambda. So and there will be a class of amplitude actually F terms. So amplitude where you pick thetas from the regulator. Amplitude that gives you contribution that where the zero mode is integrated over a subpart of the superspace, where actually that you can scale things so that you can get rho. If I have rho here, I can send rho to zero. So, but the point is that this regulator, what it does is that essentially it makes sure that the integration over the lambda, lambda bar at infinity are well behaved. No, okay. I don't remove. Okay. Yes. Okay. Anyway. So if I do higher genus amplitude computation, then what happens is that the field they have zero mode. So the conformal weight one field, the S, the P alpha, and the conjugated ghost, they have a number of zero mode that depends on the genus. Okay. So if you theta is the space time is this. The superspace variable and P alpha is the conjugated superspace variable, so it has 16 components and P alpha has 16 times J because it has conformal weight 1. Here are conjugated to the ghost, so they have 11 times J zero mode, and here this one is the fermionic conjugate to this one, it has 11 times J. So on a J loop amplitude, I will have V16 theta. Okay. I will still have D lambda bar. Ah, okay. And then I have to integrate over. So if I have for a field that has conformal weight 1, my field phi, I decompose it in terms of I to j, phi, the zero mode part, and the non-zero mode part. Okay, so you can separate the zero mode part and the non-zero mode part. So the zero mode part, there are j of them on the Riemann surface of genus j, and this is the Abelian differential. Okay. So product from I from 1 to j, and then there will be I, phi. So this is for the ghost system, and then for the new ratings. So for the superspace conjugated momentum, P alpha. And then I will have the regulator that I have to define properly on my Kenneth J Riemann surface, and I will have the insertion of my vertex operators. Let me call it X and theta. Okay. I have to tell you what is this measure. So this W, so for each value of I, the W takes the following form. The measure on the W takes alpha 8, some tensor alpha 1, alpha 8, M1, M1, M10, M10, times D, M1, M1, Dm, M10, times D, J, then W bar, times lambda bar alpha 1, lambda bar alpha 8, is n minus 1, n alpha, blah, blah, blah. And so there are 10 of them, and then there is this j lambda bar. And then there is this ds, which is the m alpha, alpha 8, m, etc. Then alpha, no, lambda bar alpha 1, lambda bar alpha 8, and d over d sn, to the 10, and then there's d over d s. So all this n bar mn, and S are the gauge invariant operator that I defined at the beginning of the lecture, yes? Oh, yeah, because you see that, okay? So this, the difference between, yes, for the zero mode, V alpha is P minus something, okay? So you see the same as, for the zero mode part, it's the same. Okay. I should have written that because for the. Yes. Yes. The coefficient one. I mean, I just wrote here for. Okay. No. So let me again count the ghost charge for this one. So the same way that I was giving the lambda ghost charge here, yeah, for these quantities. Let me give the one for these other quantities. So this is this one is minus 8, this one is plus 8, and this one is plus 3. This is right. So what you see is that you have. So what I have is that I have plus 3 ghost charge, minus 3 ghost charge, but there are j of them. So in total, the measure I wrote as a ghost charge that has 3 j minus 1. Yes, that's right. Okay. So this, the big ghost that is here, has ghost charge minus 1. Okay. So, well, so then you will not be surprised that for the multi-loop amplitude, so what you have is that you have the lambda, lambda bar, the VR, and then you have the I, 1, 2, J, DWI, DW bar I, DSI. So this has Gauss charge 3, J minus 1. So by, if I insert J equal 1 to 3, J minus 1, E Gauss, then the Gauss charge is completely screened. Okay? And so, I mean, that's from the left and the right movers. And mu are the abelian differentials, so this means integrating on your Riemann surface, mu z z bar, db dz z bar, and then I have d2 to z. Sorry. Okay. So the, in total, this thing doesn't carry any Gauss charge. And so as well, you know, by balancing the it's, okay, you have a formalism where the conformal gauge is completely fixed. Okay, but anyway, so you can see that it's the right prescription by just seeing how you compensate for the Gauss charge. So this is what would. So now I have the regulator that one has. That has to be defined on the genus J Riemann surface. So at three level that was just that, but now because all this quantity as well, they are on a cone, okay? They are the dual variables to the pure spinor. So then they are integrated to infinity. Okay, I can maybe do a gauge fixing as well. But anyway, so what's going to happen is that you extend the regulator so that with that exponential minus lambda bar, lambda, lambda, lambda bar, r theta, plus 1/2, 1 n bar, j, j bar, plus snn, lambda, gamma nn, d, plus s, lambda, d. So where s, okay, let me. So this the quantity SMN is S gamma MN lambda bar, and the N bar quantities are omega bar gamma MN lambda bar minus S gamma MN R and MN. Okay, so far, okay. And then of course, because, okay, if the genus is at least 2, then if I want to compute an endpoint amplitude, I insert integrated vertex operator. So genus 1 is special. So at genus 1, the prescription is d lambda bar, dr, dw bar, ds. And then I have one B-field insertion. Then I have the regulator. Sorry. Yes, and then what I have is that I need one n-integrated vertex operator. And then the rest are n-integrated vertex operator. This is the genus one. I think that's correct. Okay, so now there is something extremely important that that one has to discuss, is that the integration over the pure spinor lambda is still not completely safe because of the poles that you can have from the V field. Okay. So what's happening is that, okay, all the vertex operator that I described either have Gauss number 0, so there is no lambda, or Gauss number 1, 1, they are lambda, lambda bar, okay? So they nothing particularly bad happens when lambda goes to 0. But you see, here, this object here has 1 over lambda, lambda bar. So there are possible divergences when lambda or lambda bar goes to 0. Okay? It's a cone. And the point is that you cannot blow away the tip of the cone, because otherwise you lose the property of the pure spin-off. And in a sense, you change the... You want to regularize the singularity at lambda bar equals 0, and such that you don't change the cohomology of the theory, and you preserve all the property of the theory. So then one can make a counting on exactly how bad are things when lambda and lambda bar goes to 0. So d lambda bar is something that is d11 lambda over lambda cube because of, okay, what I just erased, d11 lambda bar over lambda bar cube, and there was lambda bar cube dr. So this thing behaves like lambda, lambda bar. So let's first focus on that for the two level amplitude, because this is all I need. So in a sense, I mean, the two level amplitude is this measure factor times the regulator times some, yeah, some operator f. Okay. So the point, if this operator has a singularity when lambda lambda bar goes to 0, that is like lambda lambda bar to the n. Well, okay, but not lambda lambda bar. 1 over lambda to the alpha, lambda bar to the beta. It cannot be worse. The integral is safe when lambda at 0 if f diverges less than lambda to the minus 8 lambda bar to the minus 11. Okay, so if diverges not slower than this, then the integral are finite when lambda goes to 0. So actually, why you and you can see as well that, okay, and if I am on multi-loop amplitude, then okay, then the measure factor will, okay, have some. You see, yeah, there is some lambda dependence, so there is a counting that will depend on the genus, and then so you have some condition on exactly what is the integrand of the integral for being safe when lambda and lambda bar goes to 0. So one way to understand this condition, for example, yeah, that the amplitude are safe if the operator. One way to understand the condition why operator that are integrated over the pure spinor variables this way are safe at the tip of the cone is to realize that actually in this formalism, you can construct a state symmetrical psi that is such that Q psi equal 1. Okay. The way you see that is that Q lambda bar alpha theta alpha is lambda, okay, lambda bar plus R alpha theta alpha. And then when you vary the denominator, I mean, things cancel. Okay. So that indeed any states Q psi equals 0 would be completely trivial. Okay. And the cohomology would be empty if this is the case. Okay. But then what happens is that if you can realize that actually this quantity are Fermionic variables. So this is Fermionic variables, and there are 11 of them at maximum. So I can, in fact, if you can expand that expression as 1 plus sum n equal 1 to, to 11, r alpha theta alpha over lambda lambda bar for the n. Okay? Okay, so this stops there because R is a Fermionic variable, is anti-commute, and it has at most 11 independent components. So the point is that you see a state. See the highest lambda bar here cancel, but here this one, the highest quantity is lambda bar to the 11. So the condition that you don't want to have states, for example, that diverge more than 1 over lambda bar to the 11 when lambda bar goes to 0, essentially means that you want to restrict your Hilbert space to a smaller Hilbert space where, for example, this quantity doesn't exist. Okay? So it's like the large and the small Hilbert space of the RNS formalism. When the large Hilbert space, all the cohomology is trivial because you have the psi superconformal ghost that trivializes the cohomology. But the small Hilbert space is the physical one where you have your vertex operators, doesn't contain that quantity. And here, actually, this fact that the restriction that you want, that there is no divergence at zero, I mean, is really, I think, this can be motivated this way. Okay. The other point is that now, if you look at loop, at multi-loop order, what happens is that okay, maybe I will write it now. Is that the I'm not going to screw it up. Okay. So you see here, you have the B field here, and the B field can contain spall up to anyway. The B field contains spalls in when lambda and lambda bar goes to zero. So in particular, there is these guys there. Right. So in fact, if you want, so this is, I don't know, 1 over lambda. So when you have three J minus 3 B field in your amplitude, the worst that you can have is this, and that gives 1 over lambda 12, J minus 1. 1 over lambda bar 9, J minus 1, something like that. Okay. So the condition that actually you don't diverge faster than this tells you that essentially 3J minus 1 has to be smaller than 11. So essentially that gives that J has to be smaller than 2. So this counting tells you that if you compute one loop and two loop amplitude, you don't have to worry essentially about the way I wrote the amplitude about this pole at lambda equals 0. But at higher loop order, you would have to worry about that, unless you compute some special quantity where there is no such pole. And such quantity where there is no such poles are F terms, so it's supersymmetric protective quantities. Anyway, so when you have to worry about this thing, then there's a regularization that you have to do. You have to regularize the B field in a way that is described in the paper by Nathan and Nikita Nekrasov, and I will give that regularization at the end after discussing the amplitude, the higher genus amplitude, where you don't have to worry about the divergence at the origin. Okay, so for example, I want to look at the n graviton amplitude. Four graviton amplitude, for example. J equal 1 is special because of the form of the amplitude. There's nothing. Okay. I can explain it later if I have time. So there is the integration over the Teichmuller parameter of the surface, and there is there is all this integral over the lambda bar, the r. Then there is this integral over the W bars and the S's. There's the regulator. I'm just copying what is there. There are all the B-field insertions. Okay. And then, for example, I have my four graviton amplitude, my four graviton vertex operators. And because the formula is explicitly supersymmetric, supergraviton vertex operator. So let's do some counting. So the point is that I have to. Oops, I didn't write the thetas, and I forgot the vi. So let's do the countings. So thetas are 16 zero mod, d or p, which is the same as 16 j zero mod, r as 11 zero mod, and s as 11 j zero mod. Okay. So here, the vertex operator. Anyway, the vertex operator, there is no, they don't contain any R or S. Okay. They only contain, they are superfields, so they contain theta, they contain lambda, and P, alpha, and X. With that counting, the only place where I can get the zero mod for the S goes from the regulator. Of course, I don't have the expression for the. So the form of the regulator at J loop order is so the path is the S from the So there is a term that has the gamma matrices in it and the scalar term. But for the Zermatt continuity map. So you have to get all the S Zermatt from by expanding this regulator. Okay, so in the integral, so now what you will get is that you will get S D to the 11 J, and there is a lambda bar 11 J in it. So all they come from N, and this brings me as well 11 J P or D zero mod, the same. Talking about the zero mod, yeah. From N. Right, okay, so that's one thing. Now, okay. So now the R, they can come from two sources. They can come from the D field, and they can come from N. And the D's are the P's. They can come from the vertex operators, which, so my U is d theta alpha A alpha plus, okay, pi m A m plus d alpha w alpha plus m m m f m. So actually, if you look at the way, so you want to have the, you want to saturate the D zero mode so that you have, so the best way to saturate, so the solution for the one for the saturation of the zero, the D zero mode is to take four D zero modes from the vertex operators. And then the rest of the D zero modes, you have to take them from the B field. So this one I kept. So that means it has to add to 16. So this is D J minus 4 from B. From B. Okay. So in that case, the contribution from the B field that you have to pick means that you have to take the one from this one here, and this one, so this one here, the first two terms. So that means you are taking something that is, so pi, okay, pi m is the supersymmetric momentum, so this is something like that. So this is dxm lambda bar gamma m d over lambda bar times lambda bar gamma m p r d gamma m n d over lambda bar square 2g minus 1 g minus 2. And so this way of saturating the D zero mode has brought in total 2J minus 1 R zero mode from the B field. Okay? So that means in order to complete to have 11 zero modes, you need to pick 12 minus 2J from N. Okay. So that means you have to bring down R theta to the 12 minus 2g zero modes from n. Okay, and I didn't write the one from the vertex operator, which is w alpha d alpha in modulus square, and this is what comes integrated over the pure spinor, over this measure of integration that is here, that the copy here. Okay, so now you see you should be able to see that actually there is no problem when lambda and lambda bar goes to zero. So I suppose I will be able to. So I want to look at something that has that is such that it brings a leading contribution to the amplitude. So I want to have something. So your question is that I can take some over. I can saturate the D0 mode by picking some other contribution from the B field. What you said, right? This is your question. You, from the B field, yes. But what will happen is that the number of R's that I will have there will be different. So that will change that power that is here in terms of thetas. And then, okay, from what I'm going to write next, what you will see is that the contribution you are discussing is something that contributes to an higher derivative. Something that has more derivative when you do the low energy expansion of the amplitude. So what I'm trying here to get is to get the expression that has the lowest number of derivatives, and this is the leading contribution to the amplitude when I'm taking the low energy limit. So let me just write what I'm going to write, and then I think it will be okay. All right. Okay, I have to comment. I mean, so normally if I do the counting, I should be able to see that there is no problem when lambda bar goes to zero. So this is, okay, for lambda bar, what do we have? 11j minus j plus 2. No, yeah, there is none, sorry. And here it's minus 2j plus 1, right? 1 minus. Okay, I'm doing something wrong, yeah. How do I see that? Okay. Well. Let me tell it. I mean, in word, and then I will. So what's happening is that. When in that computation there is no problem when lambda bar goes to zero, and okay, there is a reason that a priori that I can tell you is that as soon as you pick some term that depends on theta in the regulator, you are sure that there will be no lambda bar poles. I mean, I will write it later. So when j is equal to, so what happens is that you see this is something that is theta d12 minus 2j, and you have to integrate over d16 theta. Okay, so this is your superspace. So when the power of theta is non-zero here, so you're integrating over a subspace, a subpart of your superspace. Okay, so this is what you would call an F term. Okay. So what's happening is that when j is equal to 6, this power is zero, and then you integrate over all the 16 thetas. And then you get what you get, a D term. And when J is bigger than 6, a priori what happens is that, okay, you integrate over all the superspace. You don't have any specific protection. So the counting will change, but okay. So, but what's going to happen is that when J equals 6, then you will have poles when lambda and lambda bar goes to zero. When J is smaller than 6, there is no poles. So what will be needed then when j equals 6 and higher is that you will need to regulate the pole when lambda and lambda bar equals 0. And for that you will have to use the regularization, essentially the regularization that Nikita and Nathan gave in their paper. So the message here is that if you have, as soon as you pick theta from the regulator, there is no lambda bar pole. And the reason actually is, well, the formal reason is that, okay. If you scale the, if you have something that is Q times rho lambda bar alpha theta alpha measure minus rho lambda bar minus rho lambda theta. Okay. So this thing is clearly 1 plus q of something that depends on rho. Okay. Right. So when you do the integral over d lambda bar, dr, of something that depends on lambda bar, and theta, exponential minus rho lambda bar, if this thing goes like lambda bar to the minus 1 over lambda bar to the n, if you do that integral, then you find that it goes like rho to the n minus 11. Okay? It's because, the n, you see it explicitly, and the 11 comes from the counting that you, okay. The special form of the measure of integration over lambda bar that I gave earlier. So the point is that you want to integrate over the theta, okay? And say as soon as you, so this quantity is exponential rho lambda bar times 1 plus sum n equal 1 to 11 minus rho r theta to the n over factorial n. Okay. So if you want to have some contribution here from the regulator d lambda bar dr or f of lambda bar and theta, and then if you want a contribution that picks the term with rho r theta to the m, that means you get 11 minus n plus 1. So clearly, the amplitude, you can send rho to 0, and so the amplitude should not depend on the value of rho. So you want that actually this one goes to finite quantity when rho goes to 0. So that gives that if, as soon as you have picked the contribution from here, that the power here of divergence n for that function has to be 11 minus m, when m is the order of the r term that you picked in the sum. And that forces that the fact that the divergence in lambda bar has to be less than 11. And this is, okay. And then by what I said previously about the lambda to the minus 8, lambda bar to the minus 11, it tells you that actually this is safe, you cannot have a divergence when lambda bar goes to 0 from this. So normally, if I, okay, that should be obvious from by collecting the lambda bar here. Okay. So this argument tells you that, so this is what I said, but as soon as you pick as well contribution from the regulator, you are bringing some powers of theta here that are not part of your physical vertex operator. So that means effectively what you have done is that you have reduced your superspace integral of 16 theta to some lower subspace. So this sounds, as soon as you compute, I mean, F terms, then you don't have divergences. But when you get a full superspace integral, then you have a possible divergence. Okay. So now, let me. Okay. I just want to finish writing what is the expression for the amplitude, and this is finished. Okay. So if you do all the zero mode saturation and you perform, okay, from the regulator. Okay. Yeah, there is the regulator that is lambda bar minus r minus lambda bar. You perform the lambda bar integration, then you find actually that this expression is given by 16 theta. 16 theta times theta to the 12 minus 2j, w alpha to the fourth, left and right, left and one. Okay, yes, there is still the dx part, the, you know. So symbolically, what's happening is that so you do the integration over all the non-minimal variables. I mean the lambda bar, the r, and so the lambda bar integration you use the Gaussian part of the regulator. So the r, it's a, and the s, you perform the integral with Hermionic variables. So what is left is that it's left. You are left with something that is, okay, and then in terms of the matter part, so the dx, the d, you do the d zero mod, and the w alpha, which is the superfield part. So now what happens is that if you compute that superspace integral, what you find is that this amplitude behaves like d to the 2j r to the fourth. So the W alpha beta contains the Riemann tensor of the order theta left, theta right. So you get four thetas from the four powers of the Riemann-Hermann superfield here. And then the rest of the theta integral gives you higher derivatives on the Riemann tensor. And then, so the evaluation of this amplitude gives you a term that behaves like r to the fourth term times 2j derivative if you are at genus j order. So to your question, I mean, is that if you do an over saturation of the d zero mod from the b, you will change these powers here, and what will happen is that you will have terms that have more derivatives. Okay, but this is not the leading contribution. So what I want to say about this counting here is that it gives you the leading contribution to the effectuation. So there is no way. So if the optimal way is the least number of derivatives that you get for the genus J for graviton amplitude, and so that gives you a set of non-realization theorem that is the four graviton amplitude. J loop for J to fix as the low energy expansion that is d to the 2j r to the fourth plus higher order than alpha prime. Okay. So that means at one loop is the r to the fourth term, at two loop this is the j equal two, so this is four derivatives on r to the fourth, so two loop doesn't renormalize one loop, three loop doesn't renormalize two loop because you take two derivatives, etc. And it increases normally, it increases up to genus, genus six. And after, we don't know what happens. Because of the issue that I said, is that you need to carefully take care of the pole at lambda and lambda bar equals zero, and it's a complicated integral. So you don't know if this normalization theorem are extended or not. You don't know, okay. Normally you would say that since you are saturated, you reach the D term and you have no protection from supersymmetry, maybe there is nothing good happens. But we don't know what happens.